be. You don't really want to know about rain or snow in the 2015. Maybe you miss Tony's crazy rants about local forecasts every morning on his show.
Welcome to the TK Jingles podcast for August 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Jerry Negrelli. This podcast features songs from the Tony Kornheiser Radio Show and TKJingles.com. Today's episode is brought to you by the Humane Society after I discovered what my previous sponsor was doing to animals. Also, they pay better. Now, today's episode is all about Chuck Bell, the meteorologist from NBC Channel 4 here in Washington. He is a constant target of Tony. Tony is always declaring jihads on him, going all the way back to February 2010. And we'll feature a sound clip of that very first rant a little bit later in the show. So we've got a lot to cram in here today. Chuck was very generous with his time. I'm going to try to do my best to include all that I can. We're also going to have some new songs and some bonus content and a really full mailbag. So we got a lot to get to. Quick preview of the rest of the summer. John Neisminger recorded a really nice guest spot. We'll be featuring him sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks. I also am planning for an all Billy Joel episode, so Mike and Burke can skip that one. I think Claire can skip that as well. But those of you that enjoy these jingles, I think that aside from the Beatles, that's the most covered artist that we have. So I wanted to feature some of those tunes. And then I don't want to jinx anything, but the guest of honor from this summer's TK Jingles live event is planning to join me in the next few weeks for a special interview. Just like that event, I have no real expectations that this is actually going to happen, but I've been told it's going to. So if you have any questions you'd like to ask, please send them to podcast@tkjingles.com. All right, so before we get to the Chuck Bell interview, I want to play two new songs from this week. Well, actually, one new song and then one classic song. So the first one is Joe Arrow with Closer to the Start in his anticipation for Tony to return from his summer break. And then I was devastated to learn Elliot Oshansky broke the news this past week that the Golden Tickets to Heaven story was a made-up, not-real story. It inspired one of the great jingles that we're going to play here, Big Rock Cocaine Planet by Hampton Nager. And it turns out it was just from some relatively unfunny website called stupid.com. It's not like The Onion where they have fake news stories that are funny. This is just fake news stories that are crazy. I don't really understand the joke. But unfortunately, the crazy people selling Golden Tickets to Heaven story was a hoax. But I wanted to showcase that jingle because it was just so damn funny. And then we're going to go into the Chuck Bell interview. We will play some discarded jingles and some more new material. And then the mailbag.
And the folks that sing these jingles, they sing them from the heart. The show that stopped a month ago is closer to the star, closer to the star. Brad Weiss and Negrelli, they made this thing their own. And KJ John and Jason Fuse, we're getting closer to the star. Yeah, closer to the star. The monkey and the goddess are coming back to play their part. Now we're under 30 days and closer to the star. Yeah, closer to the star. Tony!
As the sun went down behind the 7-Eleven, through the trash came a crackhead walking and selling gold tickets to heaven. For 99 bucks you get eternal life, and that's a bargain, damn it. And with your dough I get to go to the Big Rock Cocaine Planet. to the big rock cocaine planet on a saucer built for three. God told me of his master plan behind the KFC. But the popo picked him up real quick, seems the gold wasn't legit. With pipes and blow and big cash, you know, and a baby alligator and a wife in tow, there'll be no cocaine planet. Though I'll burn in fire, I'll wear a wire to avoid the time. I'll drop a dime and fly to Cocaine Planet.
Now about tomorrow night. Oh, yes.
When does it start? This is the critical thing for me.
Let me start with this. Two of the models that we use to forecast, you know, the weather.
We, meaning the people know what they're doing, yeah, or
the people like
by the
me
way,
in the trade.
This guy Chuck Bell,
yes.
Chuck Bell, who's like a substitute guy on Channel 4,
right,
who thinks, oh, we only need one more inch for a new record, one, and now we can get 10 more. He's got to be sent out of here.
Yeah,
he is a twerp.
Yeah, he doesn't
He's
get it.
He's happy.
People are without power.
He's happy. He's giggling. Send me your pictures. Send you and Hoda get on an island with the Inuits in the middle of the Bering Sea. Get out.
With Frankenstein. Bobby De Niro's Frankenstein.
Just
on an
get
ice
out.
Chuck Bell is euphoric because the snow will be historic. He's laughing with glee at your misery. Now he's gonna join the podcast.
This podcast is an international show with listeners all over the world, the same as Tony Kornheiser's radio show. And you are not famous as you might be in D.C., but more infamous among that crowd because of your forecast. How did you first become aware of kind of the trash talking that was going on about you and some of your predictions?
I must admit, you know, and I'm sure Tony will appreciate this, you know, I don't really listen to the show. But a lot of my friends do. And every time my name gets thrown under the bus, I hear about it, either through a friendly email or a jab on Facebook or Twitter or something like that. And lots of my coworkers, obviously the sports department at work, listens to it. So anytime my name comes up in any kind of a reference, I get emails and pokes in the side everywhere from, you know, the other side of the newsroom all the way to South Carolina and Oklahoma and the West Coast. So I hear about it a lot.
What first got you into weather?
I've been a weather fanatic, honestly, since I was a kid. When I was in first grade, growing up outside of Atlanta, on April 4th, 1974, which at the time was the largest tornado outbreak in U.S. history, and the 118th of 144 tornadoes came dangerously close to my elementary school. So we spent the whole day ducking covered in the hallways doing the severe weather preparedness. And I'll tell you, as a first grader, you know, getting the duck and cover position and put your book over your head and all this stuff and, you know, just crazy severe weather outside, I was hooked. And I was like, you know, I wanted to know anything and everything that you could know about the weather pretty much from that day forward. And, you know, kept weather records all the way through middle school and high school, and I was able to get an education at the University of Oklahoma. So I was transplanted out of SEC country and ACC country out to, at the time, what was the Big Eight.
And then when you came to D.C. in 2004?
Yeah, I actually moved. I was the main weather guy at the Fox station in Oklahoma City from 99 to 03. And then in 2003, the company that owned our station in Oklahoma City, Sinclair, is headquartered outside of Baltimore. And essentially, they ended up doing a swap. So I continued doing the weather for Oklahoma City, but from Baltimore. And in addition, I also did the weather for their stations in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Cincinnati, Ohio. So I was doing three stations in three different cities, and I lived in a different one. So it was a very unusual kind of a job. I didn't really, you know, care for it much. It was very strange to spend all day forecasting and walk out of the door the next morning and not know what to expect on my own world. You know, it's like, geez, I spent all day worrying about North Carolina, Ohio, and Oklahoma, and I don't know what's going to happen on top of my head in Maryland. So I was like, well, this is not very satisfying as a job goes. So I started doing freelance work down at Channel 4 in the fall of 2003, and then they hired me full-time in the fall of 2004.
Yeah, I guess that's the type of job you could technically do from anywhere. I'd never thought about that before. Just standing in front of a green screen or something, you could be talking about anywhere.
Yeah, and you know that was their thought. As you know, they actually closed the weather office at the station in Oklahoma City above my loud objections. I'm like, you know, you might be able to close the weather office at the station in Tucson or in some other places, perhaps, but you really shouldn't close it in Oklahoma City. And so I started in March of 2003 up in Baltimore, and in May of 2003 we had big severe weather in Oklahoma City. May 8, 2003. You know, an F5 tornado less than 20 miles from downtown Oklahoma City. And I was on the satellite live all afternoon trying to do coverage, you know, from Baltimore. And I think that was probably the first time they realized that, you know, sometimes you need the weather people to be where the weather is. You can't just do it remotely. And it only kind of sort of worked because I'd gone to school there and worked there. I was actually able to do severe weather coverage from there. But had that same level of severe weather occurred in Raleigh or Cincinnati, places I'd never lived, then that would have been a very different thing. You don't want to have to call the tornado by the street signs when you don't know the names of the streets.
Now, do you ever actually go out there in the elements when these storms are raging and Jim Cantore style and stand in the middle of the storm?
You know, kind of, sort of. It is not, that's not my main focus. We obviously have our storm team 4x4 here at the station. So whenever it snows or anything like that here in the wintertime, you know, I'm typically out in the 4x4 driving through the snow and measuring it. And when there are hurricanes coming up the eastern seaboard, I might do hurricane coverage from Ocean City or Rehoboth, like for Sandy or something like that. So I will be out on the elements on occasion, but not chasing, not really storm chasing in the classic sense of the word. I was a storm chaser in college. And that's a very different environment. Storm chasing at that level means you get in the car at 8 o'clock in the morning and you start in Norman, Oklahoma, and 8 or 9 hours later, you're somewhere in central Nebraska waiting for severe weather to happen. You know, you'll drive all night to follow the storms or whatever you need to do. So, I mean, you have to really be committed to a level of time and travel that just isn't really practical from a TV station standpoint. It's one thing if you're the Weather Channel and you cover national weather, but for a local station, unless the severe weather is in your backyard, it doesn't really work. And I'll even say to a much greater degree, you can still kind of sort of storm chase in the Oklahoma City market because there's a lot more space than there are people. Here, you know, if you wanted to dare try and chase severe weather in and around Metro Washington, you'd be snarled in traffic from the word go. You know, I mean, there's no chase involved here. You know, it'd be like, you know, sit and stare storms as opposed to chasing them, because, you know, you just can't get anywhere around here with the traffic. And, you know, once it starts raining in Washington, you know, just pandemonium on the roads. So, no, I don't get to storm chase anymore. Yes, I'd love to. You know, maybe one of these years I can convince the station to send me out to Oklahoma for a week in April or May and do a story on it. But I don't get to chase the way I would like to.
Okay. You mentioned the Channel 4 team there. Do you often just sit around comparing notes with your colleagues for these things, or do you do a lot of it on your own? How does that work?
Well, it really is a team effort, and this is true of every weather office I've ever worked in, whether I've been the morning guy like I am here or whether I'm the main guy. You know, I am very much a slave to continuity. You know, whatever you said yesterday, you know, like when you pick your numbers very carefully. And I really don't like to change the forecast. You know, when you have to, you have to. I'm not afraid to. But for the most part, if, you know, what I said yesterday, if I said it was going to be 87 today, and then I get into the day and I say, well, maybe it's going to be 88 or whatever, I'm just going to leave my 87 alone. Now, if it's going to be 90, you know, my rule of thumb is if I can change the number by 3 or more, then change it. But if you're just doinking around 1 degree here, 1 degree there, I'd rather have the ability to say, just like I told you yesterday, I tell you today, this is what I think it is. And as long as you're within a degree or two, you know, your only scorecard is at the airport, and nobody lives at the airport.
And if you predicted snow, but we got rain. And if a derecho kills us all, when you said we'd be safe, just smile and don't look back, even though
so Oscar wrote in to ask what the weather's going to be like from August 13th to 19th in New York City.
New York City, August 13th. So we're still a good little ways away. I like your chances. Not going to be a heat wave. And at this time of the year, honestly, you're probably going to have to face rain at least once or twice that week. You know, it's more likely towards the end of the week than the beginning. So that's I would plan on temperatures in the 80s with a chance of rain late in the week.
Now, let's go a little bit further out here, looking at the Tuesday after Labor Day, particularly in the 20015 area code, Northwest D.C., in the early a.m.
Well, here's the thing about that particular zip code. You know, it's kind of the part of Washington that the rest, because I live in 20001. So, you know, the 20015 is, you know, it's Rock Creek Park. You know, it's big houses on big lots in the quiet suburbs. It's not really Washington, but those are the kind of people that live there. They want to make it seem like they're hip and cool and in the city, but they're really in the outlying suburbs. So, and there's a lot of extra hot air in that particular zip code.
That's good.
I get up at 1:45 in the morning. So what do we call early?
Wow. Well, so Tony will be up at about 3 or 4.
All right, well, that's respectable.
Meandering up to Rockville.
That's pretty respectable. I respect 3 a.m. That's early enough. But if he's getting up after 3:30, that's not really that hard.
Wow, you've out-geezered the old geezer.
But honestly, I'm optimistic for Labor Day. I'm going to be at work that day as well, but I'm going to spend the weekend ahead of that out at the beach in Rehoboth. But I honestly, so far, so good. Tuesday after Labor Day.
All right. And then lastly, so we looked at August, we looked at September. One of the hallmarks of the Tony Kornheiser radio show is the winter weather outlook that local meteorologist Kevin Sheehan gives, predicting everything from around Christmas time through March, all the major snow events we're going to have. So I'm curious, as an actual accredited meteorologist, what type of information you can reliably give about such a long, far-out time frame?
Well, I will tell you I'm sure that Tony's heard of El Nino. El Nino is real. It's not just something that we make up. It is warm ocean water in the equatorial Pacific. So basically, if you are on the equator going west from South America towards Asia, that 4,000 or 5,000 mile wide stretch of tropical waters along the equator west of South America, that's where El Nino is. And the warmer that is, the more it affects global circulations. You know, because people don't think that warm water on the equatorial Pacific affects Washington's weather. And though it's not a 1 + 1 = 2 correlation, there certainly is an impact, and the El Nino that is developed is very, very strong. It already has the potential to be the strongest El Nino on record, potentially even stronger than the one back in 1997-98. And that, and one of the ways that we do long-range forecasting is you find what we call analogs, or something that's analogous to what you're experiencing. So, you know, you just look back over other very strong El Nino patterns and what was our weather like following those patterns. And a very strong El Nino like that, the 97-98 winter here, during a strong El Nino, we had one of our lowest, we only had, I think it was 1/10 of an inch of snow for the entire winter. A very strong El Nino dramatically reduces our chances of having a heavy snow winter.
So what would you place the over-under on snowfall then for the winter? Is it like a couple inches?
Well, DC, Reagan National, averages about 15, 16 inches or so on a winter, and Dulles International Airport averages probably closer to 30. And I would say that we should expect less than half. So I would say that, you know, this will probably be, you know, a 3 to 7 inch winter for snow. based on the El Nino. Now that, you know, that the trick with forecasting such a low amount is you're only one real snowstorm away from busting the whole winter.
Blowing the whole thing, yeah.
So, you know, that's the funny thing about our business. You can win and lose at the same time. You know, you can look like a genius with a great forecast and look like an idiot because it snowed one time and busted.
So it sounds like there's a pretty reliable way then to do the analogous long-range modeling. Is there anything actually that, you know, in terms of like a computer simulation or model where you can, and I'm just curious what fidelity it is, but that you could actually look and say what the weather's going to be like in April? I mean, is it just completely absurd that you could even think to do that?
Well, they're two different sciences. There's meteorology and there's climatology. And the best way to remember the difference is climate is what you expect and weather is what you get. You know, I could give you the forecast for 4th of July 3 years from now. Oh, partly cloudy, 25-30% chance for rain, high 88 to 90, low near 70. Because that's average and that's climate. Now, you ask me on July 2nd what July 4th is going to look like, I can give a whole lot more detail. But as far as forecasting long range, the farther out you go into the future, the more that becomes a climate question and not a weather question.
All right, I've got a very serious question here as a follower of weather forecasts. I've heard some new terminology, and maybe it's not new, but over the last couple of years, words like thunder, snow, derecho, polar vortex, bombogenesis. Are you guys just making this stuff up? Or
honestly, no. The funny thing is those have all been in the weather dictionary for years. But as social media gets more and more pervasive, you know, it's somebody who puts it out there. Bombogenesis, I mean, I learned about that when I was in college back in the 80s, and I heard about it. I was born in Massachusetts, and so a good nor'easter, basically a nor'easter is bombogenesis. That's how it goes from nothing to something. So that term, I've heard all those things before. I've heard thunder snow in Georgia before when I was a kid, and that's always, when you can get thunder snow, I will tell you, it's probably coming down at more than an inch or 2 inches an hour if you can hear thunder while it's snowing, because that is a sign of how intense the upward motions, in other words, the convection that's going on, and the more roiling and boiling of the atmosphere you get, the heavier the precip is going to be at the bottom, but it also, that boiling of the atmosphere separates the charge and allows for electricity to discharge. So it's a very, when you get thunder snow, there's no such thing as a dusting of thunder snow. It's usually measured in the feet by the time you're done with it.
So these are all real things, huh?
They really are. And the polar vortex, I mean, if you're a student of the game at all, and if you've ever seen like a global satellite picture, and you not just the U.S., but if you ever watched a long time lapse of the Earth's weather, you can actually see these things. The weather around the poles goes essentially east to west, and the weather where we live in the mid-latitudes here, where Washington's at 39 degrees north, so 45 would be halfway between the equator and the pole. So in this part of the world, the mid-latitudes, most of our weather comes from the west and goes to the east. And then down along the equator, it's coming back the other way. It's easy to remember the trade winds and the trading days. You know, the ships would go, just like the hurricanes, they go from Africa to the Caribbean. So they're following the trade winds westward across the Atlantic. But if you wanted to sail to England, obviously you're back up here in the mid-latitudes. Now the prevailing winds carry you to England. So people already kind of sort of know what the prevailing winds are, but they've just never heard the terms, you know, the tropical easterlies or the polar vortex or, you know, all these other things. And, you know, like I said, I think a lot of that is just the ability to get a catchphrase or a hashtag on it. Hashtag polar vortex, you know, and that next thing you know, that's trending and no one had heard about it a week ago and now everybody hears it all the time. And a derecho, I was, even back in the days in college, even though I'd never experienced a derecho in high school or middle school in Atlanta, it didn't take long. We only get one here in Washington. We had the big one June of 2012, but that was the first real high-end derecho here since July 3rd, 4th, 5th, something like that, but it was July of 1980. So it had literally been 32 years between high-end derechos here in Washington, whereas if you live in St. Louis or Kansas City or Oklahoma City, these are a two or three or four times a summer event. So it's just where we are geographically, they tend not to be able to make it this far east.
"3:30 in the morning at a house in Northwest. A bald orange man is fearing another polar vortex. Or maybe a derecho will get his copy of the Post. He's obsessed with weather, and the thing that he fears most is the thunder snow. Thunder snow. The thunder snow is made by warm, moist air. When the clouds are cold, it makes unstable air. Electric charges form, and when they grow, well, then that's when you get thunder snow.
You mentioned that you own a 62 Corvette. Is that a convertible?
Yeah, they actually didn't start making coupe Corvettes until 1963. The split window 63 was the first coupe Corvette ever made. So all the ones 53 to 62 were all convertibles.
Okay. And you find, I had a convertible for about 10 years, and living in D.C., it was awesome for about 2 weeks out of the year, and the rest of the time I hated it. But,
well, my threshold is different than most, I think. You know, I've owned the car since 1994. It's my longest relationship, and it's a cream puff of a car, and you know, just love driving it. And I'm more likely to drive it on a mild day in January than I am a hot day in July. You know, there's no air conditioning in it. I live in downtown Washington, so, you know, it's fun to drive around the National Mall and have everybody take pictures of you with the red lights and this, that, and the other, until it's 95 degrees, and you're going 1 mile an hour with no air conditioning, the top down, and you're sitting by the engine. So, you know, it's a great parade car, but only for, like, fall, spring, and winter parades. Otherwise, you're going to burn up in that thing.
So you're saying it's like 6 inches of snow on the ground you're driving around with the top down?
Not so much snow, but I have driven it on a sunny day below freezing before. I have driven it in 27, 28-degree weather with the sun out. I never say never. But I've driven it with the top up probably a total of 5 times in 20-plus years. And I've been cold. I have a special little set of insulated earmuffs, because honestly, the only part of me that really gets cold is the back of my ears. And so as long as I can keep those warm, everything tends to be a little bit easier. But yeah. So the other thing I wanted to get out is, you know, I know that Tony takes great pleasure in skewering, you know, any member of the public, or, you know, picking fun of teams. And I'm sure that most, if not all, of Tony's regular listeners, you know, he's made them all mad at some point with a comment. And so I take great pride in knowing that I'm sort of the pebble in Tony's shoe. You know, I'm the person that gets under his skin and drives him crazy. So he can pick on my Oklahoma Sooners all he wants to. And every time I hear about it, I'm just going to simply give a bad forecast for the weekend.
The storm is his muse, looks up at the darkened sky, now casting your hues. Although he's more about the size, he loves the miles, but he's really nowhere the chaser can soar. He is not. Chuck stays safer, he loves to drive around in the January storms with the car top down. He loves to keep you warm.
It's the Chuck Brown way. Snowfall and gray skies, the Chuck Brown. Hey, Tony, give the car a break, okay? Ooh, 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 ooh. The volunteers is the
Thank you, Jason Fuse, for that lovely parody of Beautiful Day to wrap up our discussion with Chuck Bell. You know, talking to Chuck, it's obvious how much he loves his job and just the zeal that he has in his voice when he's describing weather. And you could almost hear his eyes lighting up on the other side of the phone there. So, Chuck, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us on the TK Jingles podcast. I had a lot of fun, and I'm really glad to be part of the show. Now I'd like to play two weather songs that mention Chuck Bell from TK Jingles. They're first Victim of Love by John Fitzpatrick and Kevin No by Steve Maloney and KJ. And then from that, we're going to segue into three new songs from the week. The first is a collaboration by Bill Bardo and Joe Arrow called It's Only Rocky Road. And this is very reminiscent of a Weird Al song. I think one of Weird Al's very first hits was I Love Rocky Road. But great. Just reminded me of that. Very funny song. And then Rob did a parody of Even Now, and it's funny, but I think what's funniest about it is the actual file name I saw when I downloaded it to put in this podcast. It's called Even Now 2, Evener Now, and it's about the relationship between Barry Manilow and Tony Kornheiser. And then we have Jason Fuse with one from his reject bin, Sweet Saliza.
What kind of show have you got? Podcast should be up, but it's not. Studio full of noise and dangerous boys. Plus Courtney the goddess is hot. I heard about you and Will Bond. There's just one thing I think's a put on. He's your lifelong co-host, and each show is a roast. That you can't surprise him's just a con. Kornheiser's show, we listen every day. You tell your stories, we quell. Kevin's forecast today, he's got this one thing to say. Sleep with one eye open, Chuck Bell. Tony will always come clean. I think you know what I mean. He's walking the wire, high pay plus desire. Looking for kind bars for free. We send in our emails, faxes and notes. If you read mine, that'd be cool. We tell all our girlfriends, our pinned round the world friends. Sports talk is for losers and fools. Kornheiser man, you're orange, old and bald. I could be wrong, but I'm not, no I'm not. Kornheiser fans, we show it every day. Tony, what kind of chops have we got? Wow!
Snow glows white on top of Rockville Pike. It excites the weather teams. It defies my winter forecast. And Mr. Tony looks displeased. The wind is pelting Rehoboth and Chuck Bell lied. Did an F-plus job, said I didn't try. I see the snow, I see the rain. How could I know you already did that game? Conceal, don't show, your news is old. Somehow they know. Kevin, no, Kevin, no. We've done this story before. Kevin, no, Kevin, no. Nigel's pushing you out the door. No one cares about Cubs contracts unless a storm rains down. It It seems like you don't have any facts.
If I could scoop a little ice cream, we all know you like it plain. He don't like the sprinkles, don't want no Butterfinger. He don't like the chocolate sauce, no chocolate sauce. If you try it, then you might buy it. Some flavors are more refined. I know that you like coffee, but how about some toffee? Or would you try pistachio? Pistachio, whoa, whoa. I said, I know. It's only rock and roll, but I like it. I know it's only rock and roll, but I like it. Yes, I do. Well, I like it. A chocolate chip, yeah. Well, I like it. I said, can you see that this old boy needs some ice cream?
Even now, with 80 million in the bank, after way too many plastic surgeries, even now I wake up crying in the middle of the night when I think about the tour of 1980. And even now, I should probably let it go. After 30 years of Freudian therapy, even now I see the places where maybe I'm to blame. Threatening the border was a big mistake. So rude with that interview. Even now, when I'm still peddling schlock, it's not exactly Bach or even the Four Tops, but it's all I've got. Even
now, Chris, we even go. Yeah, yeah. That row is even close. Man, us peeps have it tough. Sitting back here is really rough. Yeah, nothing's ever good. Chris, listen. The spotting smells, yeah.
Well, I woke up this morning and there was no show. But I remember Jerry has a show of his own. Can find it when you want it and there ain't no lag. So here comes some emails in Jerry's mailbag. Here comes Jerry's mailbag. Jerry's mailbag.
Thank you, Patrick. Now let's read some emails, faxes, and notes. If you'd like to write to this show, you can reach me podcast@tkjingles.com or on Twitter @JerryNegrelli or on the Facebook @facebook.com/tkjingles. You can also leave reviews on iTunes or any of the other podcast apps that you happen to use. And you can hear your special notes read here in this final segment. All right. So first, Jason Fuse, there was a segment I did about a month ago that he enjoyed. I do it every couple of months. I thought I would do it again. Where I go and look at the tkjingles.com web server log at search terms that have led people to TK Jingles. So here we go. The first one is ale bag songs. And that's an obvious typo, but just the imagery of an ale bag really gave me a good laugh. Then we have another typo, TK Jungles Billy Jael. And somehow I think Google was smart enough to realize what the hell somebody was going for there, transposing the O and the I. And then lastly, download the Kvetching Candyman. I don't think we have any jingle called the Kvetching Candyman, but it's possible. I also have a correction here I want to post. I've been mispronouncing Hampton's name on and off from time to time. I think I've said it right a few times, then I say it wrong. It's apparently Nager. And also, last week I attributed the acoustic parody of Very Mediocre just to Jason Fuse. And it turns out it was written by Hampton. But what's funny about that is the first time it was performed by Joe Arrow, I think I just simply attributed it to Joe Arrow as well. So Hampton got doubly screwed. And as I told him when he alerted me to this problem, I've made a disclaimer before. I am the new Nigel. As much energy and time as I put into this, I make silly, stupid mistakes now just because there's so much material and so many things to keep track of. Next, there was a really funny haiku exchange between Elliot and Shad on Twitter about a week or so ago, talking about this podcast and how Shad was killing time over the summer listening to Mike and Mike. I'm not going to read you the whole Twitter exchange, but I would like to make an offer. Elliot or Shad, if you would like to send in an audio recording of either of you reading your haikus, I will play them here in sequence in the mailbag next time I get those files. Then we have some negative feedback here. This is from JCM. He says, I really enjoy the jingles in the podcast, but if I would have known that this week's podcast was pretty much solely the Negrelli show, I probably wouldn't have downloaded it. Don't take it personally. I just prefer diversity, and it was a little too much Jerry for me. So I went back and looked at last week's episode, and if you remember, that was a special episode about the podcast intro songs. So it was mostly me. It was 72% of the material from me. And I did the math, and today's episode, including the intro and the outro, was 38%, like the exact, almost mirror image of that, with a little bit extra. I'll put a disclaimer in there. I'll try to keep track of that. But from time to time, there are going to be special episodes where it focuses on, like that episode I did about the 31 jingles I did or whatever it was over the summer, or the one about, the very first ones that I did as I was building the website. From time to time, it's just going to be the me show. And I guess I have that privilege because I'm hosting it. If it really is annoying or obnoxious, please, tell me in a polite way, and I'll do my best to try to manage that. But I think we keep it fairly balanced on here. Then we have a note from Robert Berg. He says, I just listened to the Trash Bin episode. I think he's referring to Nigel's Rubbish Bin episode 3, available now, hosted by Siri's cousin. It literally had me in tears, absolutely hilarious. And I encourage you, if you enjoy this podcast, Nigel's Rubbish Bin is released sporadically this summer. It's all the songs that didn't make Tony's show and didn't make the website even, because people didn't bother to send them in. It's got a really eclectic mix of crazy stuff. It's generally funny, sometimes scary, sometimes crazy. Then we have a note from Patrick Jones. Out getting a beer yesterday while wearing the TK Jingle shirt, got a grin and a thumbs up followed by a TK salute, felt good. And that is so awesome. I've gotten, I think, maybe one middle finger for the actual TK sticker before, and I've been personally recognized, but never hearing somebody else, a little out there, wearing a TK Jingle shirt, coming in contact with another little, that is so awesome. There aren't many of those shirts, so the chances are pretty low. So that's really exciting. I think Patrick is local here in the Northern Virginia area. So if I got that note from Anita or something in Alaska, or somebody overseas, that would just be mind-blowing. I wouldn't know what to do with myself if that were ever to happen. Thank you so much, Patrick, for sharing that note. That really gave me a big smile. Then we have a note here from Carol. He says, listening to the podcast through the summer has been a delight. I don't think you talk about yourself too much at all. You just talk too much. I kid because I love. Honestly, I wanted to write to send out a big thank you to Joe Arrow and John Fitzpatrick, who both recorded songs for my retirement ceremony after 24 years in the Corps. They were great songs and meant a lot to my family. I'm looking forward to starting my new job on Monday that John helped me land. Thanks to all the littles who sent well wishes. Looking forward to the new season. Semper Fi. And thank you to KJ as well, who took a song my daughter Skylar wrote lyrics for and sang for us. Thanks to all the amazing jinglers who make us laugh every day. And thank you all for listening. One more big thank you for Chuck Bell. Hope you're enjoying this podcast. The next 2 to 3 weeks are going to be awesome, at least for me. I'll be listening, so I hope you are too. Send me your feedback, leave me reviews, and come back here next week.
Rolling down the streets of D.C. Who's that over there that I see?
It's Chuck Bell. Yeah, he's a weatherman on Channel 4. Did you know he's from Georgia? Talking to Chuck Bell. His forecast will give you nightmares, but he's smiling, he don't care. Let's hear it for Chuck Bell. Chuck Bell. Chuck Bell.
More often.